You've found the Fabric Podcast and the conversation we're calling Where There Is Hope. Does it feel like hope is easy for you personally? What about in the face of all of the big, even existential crises our society is facing? Let's take this time to cultivate a curiosity about hope and together try to see where there is hope.
End of World War II, a submarine returned from Europe, having survived the war, and it was almost to its port in New Jersey when it started taking on water and suddenly starting sinking, really close to the port. Before the ship was able to go out, divers went sent down to find out what the problem was, that it was sinking. And as they got close to the submarine, they heard this loud clanking noise, and one of the divers recognized it as Morse code. And someone inside the submarine had a big wrench and was pounding on the hull in Morse code saying, "Is there hope?" There's a teen not far from here who's struggled with depression over their gender identity for years and years and years, but didn't understand that for a long time and wanted to talk to their parents about it, to try to get some, breathe some life back into themselves. But their parents have been very, very vocal about their stand that, you know, that there are men and there are women, and the only legitimate sort of relationship is heterosexual. And day after day, they wanted to have that conversation, but the only thing they could say is there hope? Right now, as we sit, there are lots and lots of people in the steel mill in Mariupol, Ukraine, and they're being bombed right now. And they're asking the same question, is there hope? Is there hope? Hope, you know, what is it? Do you have it? Do you want it? Do you think hope is just a nice idea, but it's no more real than unicorns and utopias? Maybe it's not so much hope that you have problem with, but you know, maybe it's just right now, in this day and age. Do you think hope may have been realistic at one time and in one place? Or maybe it's realistic in some parts of your life, but overall right now, I mean, we've just gone too far. There's just no hope left anymore. Here's what I know. Here's what I know. One, I don't know. I mean, hope lives in each of us, or it doesn't. I can't put it in you, and you can't put it in me. Just because I have it doesn't mean that you'll have it, or because you'll have it doesn't mean that I can have it, or I can have it today, and tomorrow all of a sudden I seem to have lost it again. I mean, I just don't know. And then there's the nature of hope itself. I mean, hope is, it's hope. I mean, there's no guarantees around it. Who knows if what we are hoping for will ever come true or not? Hope, by nature, has no guarantees. I also know that hope is challenged in ways today that are unique, and they are hard. And someone can tell us, as long as they want, that people have faced just as difficult situations in the past, but somehow that doesn't seem to make any difference right now, does it? It's unique, and it's hard right now. Acknowledging all that, we are going to spend the next several weeks understanding and searching for hope. We're going to be doing it together, and I hope each one of us is going to be doing it on our own as well. And to start doing that, there is one thing that needs to happen, and that's honesty. Honesty. I need you to know that I have absolutely no intention of trying to cheer you up. I'm not trying to make you feel good so, you know, that all this big bad stuff will kind of recede into the background. No, I really am not interested in it. And this is not a things aren't so bad campaign. No, we are going to be honest, and we are going to look at the realities of all these obstacles that we face, and we are going to ask questions of hope right in the face of them. You see, hope isn't something that we do instead of being worried or being afraid or being overwhelmed. No, hope is something we do because we are worried and we are afraid and because we feel overwhelmed. Honesty is also something that you need to have. Okay? I'm hoping that if hope is going to have any meaning for you at all, it has to be an honest hope. It needs to address the real stuff, the real way that you are encountering it in your life. Now, you don't have to tell me what all those real challenges, those real obstacles are at all in your life. You don't need to tell me about them, but you can't hide them from yourself. If you do, your hope is merely a fantasy. So, what threatens your sense of well-being? What challenges are you facing that you really do not have any answers to right now? Maybe you have hope. Maybe you only have a little bit. Maybe you are feeling hopeless. Frankly, that doesn't matter. Now, you may have noticed as I'm talking about this, I'm being pretty abstract and theoretical. It's because I don't want to prejudice it, like make you start thinking about certain kinds of hope, certain kinds of challenges, certain kind of obstacles that might be in your life. I want you to do that. I don't want to steer you down a track. On the back of your Sunday paper, you're going to see a box up there in the upper right corner. And on it, it says, these are things that take my breath away. I'm talking about the I just got punched in the gut type of take your breath away, right? They keep me awake. They weigh on me when I think about them. What I'd like you to do is to take some time and to write about what are those things. So whether you're here, whether you're on the live stream, or if you're listening to this podcast later, you know, stop and take some time and write this stuff down. Be honest. This is for you. It's private. I'm not going to ask you to share it with anyone else, right? This is for you. So take a couple minutes silently to do this. I could play music like this in the background. I don't know about you, but all my problems just disappeared, right? On the other hand, I could play music like this in the background. Yeah. That one feels way too much like the weather. So I just give you those illustrations to let you know that I do not want to prejudice this. I want you to be thinking about what are the obstacles. What are the things that are stealing life away from you? So take a few minutes and go ahead and write this. And I'm just going to let you do that in silence. Okay, you can keep working on that. This could be a good journaling project for you, particularly this week. And so keep on doing that. Now, thank you for doing your list. I created quite a list for myself. It's daunting as I look at it. Does not make me hopeful. In fact, I would say it is discouraging, making me feel less courage. But it also, when I look at this, makes me like, I want to figure this out. I don't want to give up. I don't want to give up on anything on this list. I want to have hope. Brené Brown, I know many of you are familiar with her in her book, An Atlas of the Heart, which I recommend you, says, we need hope like we need air. You can live 30, 40 days without food. You can go 4, 6, 7 days without water. You can live about 8 minutes without air. Living without hope is just, it's suffocating, and we turn to various unhelpful and unhopeful behaviors to survive when we don't have hope, and we don't want to do that. That's one of the things that we are here as a community to not have to do. So as the title of this week states, what is hope, and what isn't hope? I think it's important for us to get that straight at the basis of our, as a basis of this conversation, if we want to turn to constructive and healthful ways of facing, you know, that list that you created. You're going to find that there's a continuum that hope rests on, right? And it's on your Sunday paper, you'll see this. On the far, it's on the far right side, far left side, got to go backwards, far left side over there, you'll see there's, on one end of the spectrum, there is the known, right? This is the stuff that I simply know to be true. It is there. It's certain. It's sure. It will happen. It's a fact. It's things like, I know the sun will rise tomorrow, right? I mean, yeah, you do, right? It's silly to say, I hope the sun will rise, because you know it's going to rise, right? That isn't the area of hope. Then if you go all the way to the other side, you get what I call, the other end of the spectrum, you get what I call wishful thinking, right? I sure would be nice if that stuff happened, but it's frankly, it's unreasonable, it's illogical. There's no reason why it would ever happen. In fact, you can't really see any steps between where you are and where you're going to get to make that happen. You know, it would be things like, I hope I win the Powerball. Statistically speaking, your chances don't change by buying a ticket, although I think it's impossible to win if you don't. But it also things like, I sure hope things get better, and shrugging your shoulders, where there's no agency. There's nothing that you're trying to do or could do about it. That's just in this world of wishful thinking. It's rosy thinking. It's, you know, it's this is not, that's not hope either. Then someplace in the middle is the region of hope. The region of hope. It's unknown. It's probably unlikely. It may be against the odds. The next step, though, can be seen, even though you don't know, like, how would that next step ever really get me there? You can't see the end. You don't know how the whole thing will be put together. But there's some vision around it. This is a really uneasy and unsure region to be living in. There's a longing there that's coupled with determination, though, that is what turns it into hope. It makes it something that, you know, gives us that air, it gives us breath. It's probably not surprising that hope is a big topic in the Bible. Hope, having faith, believing, trusting, I mean, they're all kind of that same ballpark, right? They all rely on that same complex skill, that same set of complex skills of imagination and possibility and reality kind of being mixed and having to go together there. There's one verse in the New Testament in the letter to the Hebrews that I think puts it all together pretty well. You may be familiar with it. It says faith is believing, trusting. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things unseen. That's why any kind of hope is hard, because it's assurance of something that's kind of iffy, and it's also unseen yet. Hope's assurance isn't certainty. It's the kind of assurance that it gives operates like trust does. It operates like faith does. It's what can't be seen, at least not yet. It isn't a fairy tale, but it's still a stretch to think that maybe it would happen. If you want hope, and I hope you do, in fact, that's one of the things I wrote on here, is that I hope that we could somehow be a community that's able to see past all the things that we write in that box and actually start working on making them be the world that we live in. If you want hope, you need to know what it is and you need to know what it isn't, so that you don't let someone else's, you know, pie-in-the-sky, Pollyannish, rosy-tinted fantasies just like ruin your taste for hope and give up on it and say, I'm not going to go there. That's just dumb stuff. And on the other hand, I don't want the certainty of someone else's, you know, fully planned, fully resourced, almost sure thing make the unlikeliness of that thing that you're hoping for seem like, oh, why am I even bothering to hope for that? I don't have that kind of chance that they've got. There is a place for hope in there. Your heart knows it, doesn't it? But what you may not be so aware of is that your head knows it too. You see, hope is definitely propelled by our hearts, but it's not only a heart thing, it's also a head thing. After all, don't you know already that every great realization of any sort of possibility that was probably an enormous stretch, seemed actually impossible at the time that actually did happen, was propelled by hope? You know that that has happened before. You know that it can happen again. That's true, whether it's parenting. Anybody have hope for the kids? Any of your parents have hope for you? It's true for any career choice, any business that was ever started. All started with hope. To the development of alternative energy, I don't care what scale you want to look at, hope is part of the equation. Now, when we talk about hope this way, I think it seems that it's pretty obvious that it, you know, sits there between the known and that wishful thinking thing. But I think it gets a little bit more complicated when we start throwing some other terminology on it, all right? For instance, how does hope sit in the middle of terms like this, like pessimism or cynicism or skepticism or being smart or being gullible? Where does hope with those things? Or realism, hope and realism? Optimism, idealism. Where is hope, and how is hope overlaid on that big spectrum of complicated feelings and attitudes? Now, what's really interesting is that many people, and studies have shown this over and over, associate realism and skepticism together. Sometimes even realism and cynicism. In fact, most people think that cynics are smarter than other people, and better predictors of what future will happen. In that scenario, there's really no place for hope, right? There's only a place for cynics. On the other side of the scale, you have this idea that optimists are only wishful thinkers. They're suspending their rational thought, and the idealism that they're operating from is never going to get them anywhere. In that scenario, hope is lumped in with wishful thinking, with dreamers, and it's dismissed. Now, it's interesting. History and psychological research have found that those correlations are not true. In fact, what we find is that realism does not lead to cynicism or pessimism. Realism actually leads to optimism and hope. Now, what's on your fill in there is that hope is not only the encouraging air we need, although it certainly is the encouraging air we need, it is also the rational air we need. There is reason to have hope. Now, we're going to be working our way into this over the next few weeks. Right now, what I want to do is just let you sit with that idea. All right, sit with that idea that hope is actually a rational move. Hope is actually more related to realism than cynicism or that being smart and the being clever way of thinking about things. Let that and weigh that against your experience and with, you know, kind of what you know about the world over these next weeks, okay? Okay, so look at your list. My guess is you can probably break them into into different compartments, into different groups. Ones that feel manageable and ones that feel like they're just a huge stretch. You don't know that one's ever going to happen. Ones that you want to be true and you've got, but you have no idea on how to get there. And ones that you feel like, yeah, I think I know what the next steps are. Like, I think I know what to do. It's a long ways. I'm not sure I'll get there, but I kind of know what to do to get there. And then there are ones that you feel like you have power to affect and ones that are utterly beyond your control. You feel like you have no agency. So some are harder than others. Overall, it's daunting, I think, to have that quest in front of us. Now, again, kind of in the pursuit of honesty about all this, today is a unique time. It is not the first time that hope has been tested as radically as it is right now. But there are some reasons why you might be finding it particularly hard to be hopeful right now. In my pursuit to discourage you as much as possible as you begin to think about hope, let me start listing what these are. First of all, there are huge societal rifts that are growing, not shrinking today. You say that's true? They seem to be spreading into more parts of our life. They seem to be spreading into more parts of the world. Momentum feels like it is going the wrong way. That's one. Another. There's also a sense that the systems that we rely on to fix the world aren't working. And we don't have a system to fix the systems. So what do? There's even a suspicion that those systems have been working against us, actually, rather than just not working. Another one. Well, you may not be able to put a number on it exactly. There is a threshold of how many gut punches you can take before you simply collapse. I just can't take one more challenge, one more obstacle, one more hope breaker. And the truth is that you may have already exceeded the threshold of discouraging situations in your life. I don't know, what your personal punches are. I mean, they hit us in all parts of our lives. There's our physical and mental health. There's our relationships. There's our work. It's in education. It's in our finances. It's in our just general busyness and feeling like we're just all consumed all the time. And you put all that personal stuff, you know, aside, that's just the beginning. Then we get the societal stuff that we all share together. Political and social discord, racial, LGBTQ, gender equity issues, and all the disarray and the, you know, pressure, the stress we feel from that. There's rising violence, there's inflation, there's the pandemic, there's climate change. This is my cheer you up part of the message. The war in Ukraine, all those just, they have moved a lot of us over that threshold already. Then we're learning that some of the challenges we face today are not just problems, they are being considered existential threats. That casts a different light on everything, doesn't it? Take a breath. What do we do in the face of all that? Well, first of all, we name it. We don't hide from it. We name it. And then what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to hope? No, you see, hope isn't the answer to those things. Hope is the vehicle. Hope will not make those things go away. Hope will not change those things. But hope is what we can use in order to get there. And that is what we want to practice together. Folks, friends, fellow conspirators in this stuff, we need to get there. You know it. I know it. We don't need a perfect world. We don't need to solve all of our problems. We know that the world that is coming probably it will be different. Some things we're going to like better. Some things we're going to like worse than what we have already. We can deal with that, okay? We can deal with that change. But we do need a place for our people, for all people to be able to thrive. We need a home for our children and our grandchildren, for their grandchildren. We need air to breathe. We need water to drink. We need food to eat. We need to be in a relationship with our planet in which we are partners with it rather than adversaries against it. That is something that we need to do. And all of that, knowing that, is a vision for it. And I have a vision for that. And I hope you have a vision for that too. But I can't see it by myself, and I certainly can't hold on to it by myself. That's why I want to do this together with you. See, hope isn't a certainty. It leads the way to what to do. And the vision grows as we get closer, and the closer we get, the clearer it gets, and the clearer it gets, the better we can see what to do. And it goes on, and we march on that way. See, and this is really an important thing for us to know about hope. Hope is not an emotion. It doesn't come and go with our feelings. No, hope is a choice. Hope is a choice that we make day in and day out despite our feelings. And we claim it together. Lots of emotions tag along with hope. I know that. But hope isn't one of them. Hope is the product of your resolve. When you look into the eyes of the worst that life can throw at you, and you refuse to accept that as your fate. Now, I do need to throw the caveat that if you're struggling with hope and with depression because of mental health issues that you have, this conversation is so important for you. The company of this community to help you with that is also really important, but you also need professional help. You know, so go see, make sure you're checking in with the therapist. If you don't have one, find one or be in touch with us so we can get in to help you make that connection as well. So that really is an important thing to remember on top of this. But like I said last week, I know hope is hard. Hope is always hard. It's the definition of hope. But that isn't the question. It isn't whether hope is hard or not. The question about hope is whether you have it or not. And I want you to choose to have it. About 2,000 years ago, there was a thinker who had not known Jesus, but was really swept up by the tsunami that Jesus' life created. And decades later, among that community of Jewish people at that time, started reflecting on what had been going on for thousands of years before the time of this person. And was realizing that they were living in a very difficult time. I mean, life 2,000 years ago was tough anyway. Life expectancy wasn't long. Injustice, just it was a tough place. Plus, anyone who decided to try to remake the world and remake and build community around what Jesus had shown them was, you know, unapologetically and intentionally persecuted just for doing that as well. So this was not an easy time for them. And this unnamed thinker was reflecting on the history of their ancestors who had been at times been successful and prosperous, but most often had been desperate. They were enslaved, they were persecuted, they were on the run, they were exiled, they were cut off. And despite all that, they continued to see themselves as people of promise. Not just for themselves, but promise for the world, promise for other people as well. Now, these were not perfect people. I mean, they had as many scoundrels, as many misguided souls among them as any group of people did, but somehow that didn't change things. They, you know, damn it, they weren't going to give up on this vision that they had from thousands of years ago. Somehow they held on to hope, even when they couldn't see the fulfillment of it for generation after generation after generation after generation. Let me read you just a short passage from this person's writing. This writer had been going parading like dozens of characters that are these Old Testament figures pass and showing how they were holding on to this hope no matter what. And it goes on and says, all of these, they all died in faith. They all died holding on to that promise without having received the promise. Imagine the centuries, the millennia passing by and still holding on. But from a distance, they saw and greeted those promises. Now, there's a story behind that metaphor that the people who first would have heard this would have remembered immediately, and we'll talk about it another week. But what they're talking about is a vision, this imagination, this determination, this perseverance. Each of those people for those generations and generations had seen their lives, their work as part of something bigger than what they themselves were accomplishing, something that could ever be realized in their own lifetimes. In fact, often they were seeing their situation digressing rather than progressing through their lifetime. These people confessed, that word means spoke the same thing together. Confess has different meanings today, but they spoke the same words, and those words are that we are strangers, we are foreigners on this earth, because they saw something different than what met their eyes. Goes on and says, now people who speak in this way are making it clear that they are seeking a homeland, a place where they belong, a place where they are in sync with all that they hope for. If they had been thinking of the land that they had left behind, those golden years, those good old times, they would have had opportunity to return to it, to recreate it. They could have settled into that and settled for that, but as it is, they yearn for, they long for, they desire a better country that is a heavenly one. Like the kingdom of heaven that Jesus talks about. This isn't heaven as a place you go when you die, but a place where God is alive right now, right here, woven into our lives and the way we live together. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Indeed, God has prepared a city for them. Maybe the most complicated few words in that passage. In an era 2,000 years through culture and language and geography where they saw a very instrumental type of God, but what they're saying is that God was in sync with them. They had a vision and of being woven together with this fabric of existence that they were a part of and could find their place in. 2,000 years ago, people were hoping. That hope had been passed down to them by over 1,000 years or so by others, and is now passed on to us 2,000 years later. So are we fools? Are we suckers? Or are we part of this long chain of architects of what will be who won't give up even when it isn't going the right direction right now? In the weeks to come, we are going to be looking at how hope grows and how it can change the world. Now, my only purpose today is to invite you to start wondering about where hope is thriving or where hope is threatened in your own life. Personally, I want you to stare the hopelessness that has taken root in your life. I want you to look it straight in the eye and tell it, you're coming for it. You don't know how you're going to do that now, but that is what you are about. I want you to do that because I need to do it too, and I can't do it alone, and I don't think that you can either.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wonderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.